you got to share in this course.
Okay. So we're finishing up here, finding lost documents. What happens when you find a receipt for a ksuva? Does that mean the ksuva was paid or not? In other words, you find the bill, which is the ksuva, the husband has to pay the ksuva, and he wrote the receipt. Does that mean he paid it, or does that mean he just had it ready in case... does that mean that... well, actually, what would have happened is the wife would have had the ksuva, and after he, she would have given him the receipt that he paid her the ksuva. So,
yeah, so is a woman no heg to have that in anticipation?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She would have had that also, in case. Also, that's
a guy plans, you know, because he may be giving a gift, what have you, but. Seems to me, you know, the circumstances would be a little different.
You're saying, well, a woman pays the debt. Well, she would have to.
No. But if this is a shover for the kasuba being paid,
mm-hmm.
he is paying her for the kasuba. She would be giving him the receipt.
Right. So is it specifically a kasuba, or is it really any document? So I think we had said that it was. That was one of the examples we gave, but maybe I want to get away from it. I'm not sure because there. Let's just say it's a receipt for an IOU. Somebody has an IOU. They loan somebody some money, and we found the IOU in his documents together with the receipt. So does the receipt? Let's stick to that case. Cause it now, even though we did talk about Uksuv, I agree it's a little more. Does the woman have the ksuva? Does she have the receipt? Not the husband, but she has the ksuva. And so this case sounds like you found an IOU that somebody owed somebody money, but the payment was next to the bill that said that they owed the money. So the question was this receipt for the payment actually used, or was it maybe just written at once they gave the money? This way they'd have the receipt. And then we asked the question, do people typically do that to pre-write a receipt? And we said they did, because they were very anxious to get that bill paid. And if you didn't have the receipt, you couldn't get that bill paid. So they would pre-write the receipt. So then we said, if you're going to do that, though, if you give somebody, they'll collect the bill and they'll ignore the fact that they have the receipt. And so we said, in this case, where the bill was torn, that indicated that it was paid. That was where we were yesterday. And that's where we're going to continue on today. That was the din of Rav Yirmiya. It's a paragraph up on 20b. Omar Rav Yirmiya Barava Omar Rav Simpon Hayotzi Mitachas Yidei Malva. If the receipt is found, in other words, the lender, there's a well-known that there's a document that he loaned somebody money. And you find a receipt in his name. So the question is, do we give it to the borrower? And then he won't have to pay. So we say, afal pisha kasub ksav yado, and it's written in the lender's handwriting. Einu ela kemitzakeh v'pasul. He says, that doesn't mean a thing. We don't know that the bill was paid and that this receipt was actual proof to that, so you can't give it to the borrower. And lo mi boy because of ksav yado, and not only if it's written in the sofer, there you'd kind of say, of course, it doesn't prove anything if it's written in someone else's handwriting, because there you could say, if it's in the scribe, dikalim risafris and mekasab, alfiyab kasab ksav yado, even if it's in his own handwriting, and you could say, well, what could be better that a receipt from the lender that all paid, all good. The answer is, the lender wrote it, Sava Dilma Misrami Vasubena Shmoshes. The guy's going to come a minute before Shabbos, and all the pens are put away, and you can't get a scribe for anything. Everybody's getting ready for Shabbos. And he says, oh, I'll pay you now. But just give me a receipt. Oh, you don't have a receipt? Sorry. The Elo Yaivle, and if you don't give him a receipt, Lo Yaivle Zuze. No receipt, you know, no, if you don't give me a receipt, I ain't paying you. Active, oh no. So the smart lender is saying, let me have a copy of a receipt nearby. The key also, when he comes, I'll give it to him. So that's the halacha of Rav Yirmiya, that if you find a receipt, you can't assume, even though normally a receipt says this loan was paid and you'd want to give it to the borrower, Rav Yirmiya said you don't. Don't automatically give that receipt, because maybe the lender wrote an extra copy. So the question is, does this hold up? Or no, a receipt belongs to the borrower. He paid it, and that's why the receipt was written. Let's give it to him. But that's all. Rav Yirmiya said no. Absence of proof. Tanan. So now we're going to ask questions on this Rav Yirmiya. We learned in our Mishnah that if you find a receipt with a simpon, or you find a bill with a simpon, something that is a deal that knocked off that deal, so you listen to what the bill said. So basically, if you find an IOU plus a receipt, so you can't collect that IOU. So why would we say that? We're saying that sometimes the receipt didn't prove that the bill was paid. The answer is, in this case, it did. The loan document was torn. And that's what when people pay, they do the loan. So what happened was the borrower paid and they tore up the loan. And he left the receipt. He forgot to pick it up. A lot of times people leave the receipt today. You know, you leave receipts around. It's in the trunk of my car, I have receipts for all kinds of stuff that's in, you know, sitting over there. So we want to know, do we agree with Rav Yirmiya that you don't give it back? So we're saying that everybody would understand that you give it back to the borrower if the original document is torn. Because it's not just the receipt that tells us it was paid. The fact that it was torn tells us it was paid. Tashma, let's try another proof. Hanim selecha ben shtaros of shtar shu yosef ben shim perua. If you find in between your documents a document of Yosef ben Shimon, and it's written, and it says it's paid, shtar shnei peruyim, you can assume that they're both paid. Meaning that we assume that the receipts are valid. So the Gemara says we can give the same answer. Maybe the Kedir Safish and Imsa Ben Shtar's Kruim. If that's as if the documents are torn, Hachanamish and Ben Shtar's Kruim. We want to know if the original document isn't torn. But we're saying everybody agrees when the document is torn, that tells us that it was paid. So we're going to try again for a third time, and we're going to end up giving the same answer. Toshma, Shvua, if a person... what happens is the original players have died, and somebody inherits their estate, and they have an IOU to the estate. And now they want to collect their father's debts. So we make them swear that the buyer never paid back. Shlo peganu abba, v'shlo omer lanu abba. Our father never told us. Shlo metzinu bein shtarosh abba shishtar zuprua. As far as we know, they have to testify that as far as they know, this document is valid. And then they'll be able to collect from the lender. So why do they have to jump through hoops to collect? Why wouldn't we assume it's a good document? So Amrev Safish and Imsimin Shah's Korean. Same answer. It's because it was torn. If it's torn, if it's found in between torn documents, we are suspicious. But otherwise, we wouldn't be suspicious. We'd let them collect. So we're gonna try again. It's interesting when the Gemara tries so many times like that. Is it really true that we can ignore this receipt? Because it's no, we want to think that a receipt means it was paid. So Tashma, come in here. Asimpon sheishu lavedim, if there's a receipt with witnesses, so yiskayim bechosmav. All you got to do is, if those signatures are good, the receipt is good. I thought Rav Yirmiya said you could ignore a receipt. That was just written in case the lender just wanted to have an extra copy. So the Gemara says you could say it differently. Amy Yischaim Mechosmos Mav, Deshalinin Lulasadi. What it means is not that the signatures are a slam dunk. Really, the lender just had this ready. But you know what? Ask the people that signed it, Lesahadi Iparua Ilav. You can ask them. Go check it out through the witnesses if it was paid. So instead of just giving the receipt to the borrower, you don't have to pay this loan, you can ask the people that signed it, was this an actual receipt or not? Were you aware that it was paid? Or no, did the lender just pre-write it? So
that the lender is pre-writing the receipt.
That's what Rav Yirmiya did.
For with his own signature, that's one thing. But we're just introducing now that the receipt is with witnesses. Also.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have thought that, okay, he's, you know, pre-writing the receipt with his own signature. All right, but the moment you go and have witnesses, witnesses are testifying to a particular occurrence that they're eyeballing.
Oh, check on the everywhere.
Now, all of a sudden, you have witnesses who are testifying to something,
mm-hmm.
that a loan was repaid, and they're not seeing the exchange of money?
Correct.
That's...
Somebody asks you and says, you know, I need, in case he pays me money, I want you to sign that I'm the lender, and I'm willing to let that person not pay me back if he gives me the money, and I'll give him this document. Are you willing to sign that? right. So that's even so we're saying we're finding out that it's even a bigger kiddush, right? It's even a correct. So even a signed.
So how can they testify to such a thing? How can they say, yeah, we know it was paid? It could be that they were doing.
We know that the lender authorized us to sign it.
They're confirming his intent, aren't they?
Right.
But intent is nice. That's a wonderful thing. But here, our whole discussion is we don't want a Ramai. We don't want we don't want somebody double dipping in all this.
He's saying that you're really asking how you could even sign such a receipt.
Yeah.
That he can for his own.
But we're saying not only can they sign it, but it doesn't even have to be true. Well, that they're signing a receipt that he was paid, and he wasn't paid, but as long as the lender's requesting it, so he'll have it when he is paid, we have to be suspicious that we can't automatically give it to the borrower because we don't know. Sometimes lenders write these things to have them ready. And so far, that's why the Gemara keeps challenging it, but so far we've been able to say every case where we've said that you can ignore that we don't ignore the receipt. Maybe it's because it was obvious that it was paid because the document was torn. So we're going to try again. Gemara doesn't give up easy. Yeah.
Are you? Let's see if I understood this correctly. Did you say that is it okay or not okay for a lender to have, you know, like a book of receipts like we have today? You can pick up at Staples. Mm-hmm. They're basically blank and ready to go, and all he has to do is just sign his name. That it's not official unless the signature is there or the date is there or something, but he has it ready to go, especially in your pre-Shabbos case.
But he actually has witnesses on that book of receipts. That's what the class here is asking, isn't that? There are signatures.
Well, even if the witness name is there, all the witness is saying is we attest to the fact that
that this debt was paid. Isn't the witness saying we're confirming that this debt was paid?
Lender affixes his signature to him and hands it to the guy. Everything is ready to go. The witness has signed that yes, indeed, this is true, what's on this piece of paper. They're witnessing the fact that the lender is legitimate and that this is a legitimate receipt and that his signature is okay and it's all ready to go. So when the guy is prepared, that when the guy comes and pays him back, he just puts his X on the line.
So that's what Revierme would have to explain, is that they're not actually testifying that he got paid the money, but that the lender is prepared to release the borrower when he gets the money, and we're confirming that, yes, this lender is legit, and we know about the debt, and we're signing that he's willing and ready to give this receipt when he gets that payment. Something like that? That's what you'd have to say something like that, or the.
Right.
But we're just surprised at the wording because basically the witnesses signed. We confirmed that the money was received for this. But what Richard is saying is that it's not saying that the money was received, but that the lender is ready to receive the money and give this as a confirmation that he received the money.
Is that really a Kiddush? Hey, by the way, the mob is ready to get his money back.
But without this, he won't get it.
So then the document needs to say that, and in which case it's basically a useless document. If I'm a witness, I'm not going to sign that I saw the borrower pay the money back when I didn't. So if that's what the but this simpon says, I'm not going to put my signature on that because it's not true. I didn't see the borrower pay back.
Well, you think of it like notarization. The witnesses are testifying to the signature of the lender that he is a legitimate, upright person, and that when he affixes a signature, then it's payback. It's all, you know, it's just a different avenue.
I'm wondering if maybe we're right, that the witnesses aren't saying we saw the money paid back. The witnesses are saying that this person is owed money, and he's, if you get this document, he's prepared to release you from, you know, the money that you owe.
And that is exactly the purpose that a notary serves, I think. That's all it says, is that this signature is my signature. That's all the notary says, and everybody knows that. It's not saying that what's in the document is true.
That's correct.
But that's not what. That's not the function that Adim serve in the Gemara. At least that, not that I understood.
Yeah. So we'll need to go. That it really gets into what a receipt is. You know, what exactly does the receipt do? It's a confirmation. It's something that. But okay. But that's what Rav Yirmiyah said, though, that. We're more questioning how the witness can sign it, but assuming he can get the witnesses to sign it, our question is it an actual document, or could it just be written litzakeh, just for fun? Just, to, okay, pay me, I got it here, ready to give it to you, to let you go. You know, yeah.
The lender is making a document that's against his benefit.
Correct.
It's the benefit of the borrower.
Right, correct.
So if the witness is signing it, and it benefits someone, the other person...
No harm done. Right.
It's harm to the lender.
Unless, of course, he loses it before he gets the money.
And that's our question, right.
Okay, but that's why this seems like we're adding layers intended as a protection. And all it's just making the water is even more cloudy.
I guess normally it's only a receipt is only given if it's paid. We're introducing the possibility that the receipt might not have been actually might not have actually happened yet. And so if you find one, you need to confirm before you give it to the borrower that in fact the lender delivered it, that the money was paid. That's really what Rav Yirmiyah was saying. And that's why Deshalina, that's exactly the top of today's page. You ask those witnesses. Oh, by the way, you wrote that it was paid. Was it really paid? Shalina lu, I perua, I la perua. I guess if they wrote there it was paid, so then why would you need to ask them? They wrote that this is confirmed that I know the loan. I'm no longer making any claims against the borrower, and they signed it. So we're asking them, was this actualized? Tashma, let's try again. Simpon sheishul of edim, the receipt is signed kosher. My edim. What are witnesses? The witnesses that Adikiyam, that the court testified that this is a real document. So you see that a receipt is a receipt. The Mursid Hakanan Mistavra. And this is also logical. Mediktani, here this is just proving that the witnesses are real. Like, because it says, Mediktani Sevish, Eno Love Adam. If there's no, it says no good. My name, what does it mean there's no witnesses? If it means there's no witnesses at all, obviously it's no good. So over here we mean witnesses that the document has been confirmed by court, that these aren't forgeries. So this doesn't, this didn't really help us. We were talking about whether the witnesses mean it was paid, but first of all you have to figure out if they're legitimate witnesses. Otherwise the borrower could write such a document. Gufa. Simpon sheishul of edim. If you have a receipt, yiskayim b'chosmav. You need to confirm that those signatures are good. Hey, if there's no witnesses at all, but yotzi mitachis shlish. What about if it's given by a trusted third party? Oshi yotzi la'achokitam shtaros, or it's signed at the bottom of the IOU, then it's kosher. Yotzi et midei shlish dahamnua malva, because the lender is saying, I trust this third party. When this person pays back the loan, give him the receipt. Yotzel acha kitam shtaris. And also, if it's on the bottom of the loan document, de'i lav de perua, had the document not been paid, lo havi mor le shtar, the lender wouldn't have let them write it on the shtar. So, that therefore, it also serves as a receipt. Hadron lecha shnai moksim. It comes out that we're seeing a few methods to pay back a loan. One of them is to tear the loan document. Another is to write underneath it that it was paid on the document itself. That's what we're saying. And then a third is to give a receipt to a trusted third party who you pay the document, he can give you this receipt, and he can manage this loan. And then our question was, what about if you find in the lender's documents this receipt, and we don't know if it was actually paid or not? When do we give it back or not? That's the discussion. Hadron Lecha Shnayim Mokhtu. We'll come back. Okay. New Mishnah, we're finally there. Eilu Metzia Shalom. So when can you finders, keepers, losers, weed? When is it you find it and you can keep it? So in some cases, you find it, good for you. That's your lucky day. You found something, you keep it. And in some cases, ve'elu chayv lahachwa. In some cases, you can't keep it. It belongs to somebody and you have a mitzvah. Not only that, you have responsibility. You're going to have to put up alerts everywhere. Look what I found, missing cat. You know, I got to tell everybody. Eilu Metzia Shalom. The following things, you find it, you can keep it. Matzah peiros mefuzarin. You find scattered fruits, scattered goods. Mos mefuzar, even scattered money. Krichas b'shus harabim. Or you find even loaves of bread. Now, normally, loaves of bread, somebody baked them. But these are, we'll have to see. We're going to talk about whether these were generic loaves or these were... Krichos, Omrim Katanim. Bundles? Oh, I see. Bundles. Small sheaves. Okay, like grain, I guess. Okay, thank you. Krichos, small sheaves that are found in a busy place. Or Igule Dvela. Or date. Rolls. Figs. Fig rolls. Kikros anachtim. Here we get to the loaves. The loaves of the baker. Bakery loaves, you can't identify. They're generic. You know, the big Kroger loaves. Machruzi shodogim. Fish on a string. In those days, they used to put fish on a string. Anybody know why they would put fish on a string? Is that the easy way to carry them? Or?
It's just the easy way to follow them through the gill.
Uh-huh. Avachatika shobasar, or pieces of meat. Gizei semer, pieces of wool. Halokami dasan. These are wool that you can buy... and anywhere, they're pretty generic. And whereas they're specifically wool that's made from a certain shop that you'd be able to verify. But these are, basically what all these have in common are these are generic goods. These are goods that are randomly found and there'll be no way to identify them and nobody would have any hope of getting them back. And Anisei Pishon or Flax, Lashonashar, Gaman, and Tongues of Purple. So all of these, you could keep them. If you find... these various generic types of products that are in public places or are there's really no, it doesn't have somebody's name on it and it's not, you know, identifiable and you are welcome to keep these. Steve Rimmer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is that since it's in a public place, especially in those days, the item would be trampled, it could be kicked around, it would be all messed up and dirty, so the owner is... you know, pretty much going to give up hope of ever finding it, so that it fits very well into the Jewish area.
Okay. Let's see some Rashis. That's a good point. We're going to get into this discussion real quick. The issue is, somebody at one time owned these, so how is it I'm allowed to keep them? They belong to somebody. So there's a concept that even though something belongs to you, once... first of all, you don't have it. You no longer have control over it. And two, you have no hope of getting it back. You've given up hope of getting it back. So you know, then at the point where you don't control it and you don't hope to get it back, it's no longer yours, even if you would like it to be. It doesn't make a difference. In order to be yours, you have to exert some kind of control over it or at least have some thoughts of being able to get it back. But at that point where you're... we're calling that word yish, meaning that you no longer have any hopes of getting it back. So then it's anybody's free to keep it. You, as much as you would want to say it's mine, it's no longer yours. You, in order to be yours, you have to have either control over it or a way that you can reasonably get it back. And once you give up all hopes of being able to control it, it doesn't have to do with what you want. It's no longer yours, and anybody's free to keep it. Now, on the other hand, where you didn't give up hope of getting it back and you have a reasonable way to identify it, you can't keep it because somebody still is hoping to find this. It used to be his, and it's stealing if you get it. So we're trying to figure out how do you lose ownership? How do you have something that used to be yours? At what point do we say, no, it's no longer yours? This magic word called yish. Let's see Rashi. Matzah peiros mefuzara. You found scattered fruits. Nishashu abayla mehen. K'omer gemara v'hefker hein. The owner gave up. Oh, he's not going to be able to go find them. Most scattered money, oil, the ein lehem simen. Nicker, there's no way to identify money. Ayusha miayish, vavilei hefker, is that tam kulam? The reason for all of these things that you could keep them is that the owner gave up hope, and they don't belong to anybody. They're free and clear. Kikrus, omrika, thank you, that was these small sheaves, like it says, me'ela and Yosef in his dream, etargi misham, mikrin krikin. Bershusa rabim, as we said, shakol, everybody steps on them. Now Rashi throws in, what does it help that it's in a big, even high, even if you could have identified them, nikshur, they were tied, harvi nishkis, it's going to be kicked around. There's no real hope, even though you would stack them a certain way or organize them a certain way. Once it's in a big public place, it's going to be shuffled around. And then just one more, Rashi shall knock them of a baker. The baker, all the loaves are identical. So how are you going to say that's my loaf of bread? But if you baked it at home, you know, then it has your own seal on. Okay, let's see the Gemara. Matzah peiros mefuzarim. You find scattered fruits. Nobody can identify them. The comma. How much is considered scattered? Yeah.
You didn't finish the Mishnah.
I didn't? I'm sorry. Thank you. You are correct. Reb Yehuda Omar, back to the Mishnah. Kol sheyesh bo shinui. Reb Yehuda adds that it's true in many cases you can keep it, but if there's something unusual or different about this item, you can't keep it, because since it has something unique, the owner hopes to get it back because he can prove it's his. Chayav lahakris. Ketza, for example, matzah igel besocha cheres. If there's a piece of earthenware inside the figs, or kicker, and there's besocha mos. Somebody put money into the loaf of bread. So this is unique. Rishim Belazar says, kol klei en purya. He says, if this is a klei en purya, which we'll have to see in the Gemara, basically it's some type of new thing that even the owner doesn't even know what it looks like. Ein chayv, you don't have to announce it. So the concept that we're beginning here is that if there's something unique that can be described that makes this different than the average thing, you can't keep it so fast because the owner's hoping an honest person will find it. And I'll be able to prove to him that it's mine because it's something is unique about it, or unique or different, if that's the right word. Let's see the Gemara. How much is scattered? It's a kav arbamas. It's up to a kav of produce scattered over no bigger than a distance, or at least a distance of 4 amas. The owner is not going to give up hope of getting it back. So, hey, Kidami, what's the case? E derek nefila. If the guy dropped it, you know, so then even more than that, he gives up hope. It was dropped. He couldn't hold on to it. The e derek hinuach, but if it was placed there, and the owner was coming back, he went to the bathroom and he put it down. I have a factory that usually gives me, I take some things to check them to see whether there's insect infestation. And sometimes I use the restroom. So I don't take food into a restroom, so I leave it outside. It looks funny to see like something sitting. I put it there, so when I come back, I go and I pick it up, right? So if you see somebody left something there, so you know that it's not just scattered. Or a few butts, even less than this, he's going to come back and get it. So we're talking about the place in the granary where they gather grains. And people pick up their grains from the grain floor where they have all the machinery and all the equipment. People pick up their crop. And sometimes there's little bits left that's not worth their trouble to pick up. And so this in this case, so kavva arba amos, if there's a produce scattered over arba amos, the nefesh tirchayu, it's a schlep. So lo torek inchi, people won't go to the trouble of picking it up. V'lo hadar asi v'shako, nobody's coming back to get that. Afker mafke, you can assume that the person left this for anybody who wants to take it. Anybody who wants it, I'm not going to trouble myself. But less than this, it's not scattered so much, torek v'hadar asi is going to go back and take it. V'lo mafkelu, and he won't give it up. So there's a granary, there's a place where people come to get their crops winnowed and piled and processed, and there's a big, large area where people put their stuff down. So when stuff isn't organized and it's scattered, so if it's scattered that much, you can assume the owner's not going to bother with it. Boy, Ravir miachatzika b'shteyam, what if it's only in two amos, which isn't scattered so much, but it's not as much food? Kav arba amos, when you have a whole kav and arba amos, time and mind, mishum, you know, it's too much work. But chatzikav b'shteyamos, if it's only in two amos, it doesn't take much work to gather in two amos, so you can just grab it. So maybe he doesn't give up hope. Or Dilma, or maybe the reason is Mishum de lo chashivi. Maybe he gives up hope because people don't bother with something that's not that valuable. The chatzikav b'shtey amos and a half kav in two amos, kiv de lo chashivi, since it's not valuable, mafkalu, people give it up. Kabayim b'shmona, or what if it's valuable, it's two kav, but it's spread over eight amos. Kav arba amos time am I. One kav and four amos, the reason he's miyayish is mishum. It's a lot of work. And it's not worth, the most I can get is one kav. The kosha came kabayim, and certainly two kav and eight amos, it's a lot of work. Now it's even more work. Mafkaluhu, of course the owner gives up hope. Odilma, or maybe the reason is mishum delo chashivi. I'm not going to go to work. It's not worth the trouble for just a kav. But the kavayim, but double two kavs and eight amos, kiv de chashivi lo mafkaluhu. Or what about if it's not just wheat, not just grain, it's poppy seeds, sesame seeds, kam shushiv arbamas. Mao kav arbamas, a kav and arbamas, shum delo chashivi, it's not valuable. He's mafka, he gives up hope. He gives up ownership. But sesame seeds, oh, you could get tchina out of that. You could get valuable stuff. Kiven delo chashivi, since it's valuable, he's going to come back and get it. Odil mev shum de nafesh tirchayu. Or it has to do with work. Sesame seeds are very small. It's going to be even more work. Of course he's going to give up ownership. Kav tamori. What about if it's a kav of dates? Kav trimoni or pomegranates. Barba mao. Kav barbamos. A regular kav of wheat. The reason you give up hope, mishum de lo chashivi, it's not so valuable. But these things are more expensive. Pomegranates, dates are expensive. Tamori barbamos. Kav trimoni barbamos. Nami. Kiv de lo chashivi. Do you say, well, I guess apparently those are not so expensive in Eretz Israel, so people will give them up. Or maybe the issue is that wheat is takes work to pick up, but these are bigger. A date is big. V'kav tamori barabamas, or pomegranates, kivin delo, it's not so difficult. Lo mafkelu. So is the main thing the value, or is the main thing the work entailed? Teku. We'll have to ask Eliyahu HaNavi. So basically, it's sometimes hard to figure out if the owner gave up hope or is he coming back. You're in this big, large area where everybody brings their products and it belonged to somebody. The question is he coming back? When can you say for sure, oh, he's not coming back for that? Why? Because it's going to be, it's not worth the trouble for him to pick this up. Or is it because it's scattered and that's why it's not worth the trouble? Or is it because the crop itself is not valuable? And so we have all these questions. We're going to wait for Elio to help us figure out what exactly the measure is. So how to know when the average person gives up is a little bit difficult. You keep it, you might be stealing. It's really a question. Sometimes you come somewhere and you're just wondering, can I take this? You know, did somebody leave this for whoever wants? Sometimes in the kolo you have that question. Somebody leaves food over there, you know, is that for anybody to take, or they just went to the bathroom and they put their food up there, you know, like sometimes it's dangerous to leave certain things in certain places, you know, that if you leave it there, somebody's going to assume that it's ownerless. Or maybe they made a mistake. Maybe you didn't give up hope. You were planning on getting it. Guess what? If you assume something's ownerless and the owner didn't give up hope, you're a thief. You took something that belongs to him. On the other hand, if you have the right to assume you left it there, you know, you left cash sitting there on the, you know, then you're perfectly within your rights. Ask Elio. Itmar, as we learned.
Why did you even consider the fact that it had gotten damaged in a beer shoes a lot, like what Richard was saying? It's kind of crazy. It's either it's not worth the time to pick it up, or it's not valuable enough to waste your time on it.
Mm-hmm, right. Those are the two factors, right?
Right, but invariably, if it's in great use already, it is going to get trampled on and stuff. Mm-hmm. Bigger the area.
Right.
But they're not even worried about that.
Somewhat. In the Mishnah, we said, certain things in Rosh Hashanah, you can get them because they're trampled on, right? It seemed like we were worried about that. The other things were not necessarily in Rosh Hashanah. Just the krikos were. The other things, not necessarily.
I gotcha.
Which is a good question. In other words, is it only krikos Rosh Hashanah, or is it just... The Mishnah specifically said it there by the Krikos, but not the other things. Okay, let's see the Gemara. And this is a famous discussion, and it's very important. Does somebody still own it or not? Can I take it? It's at one time it belonged to somebody. You know, so Itmar we learned. Yiyush Shulomidas. What if the guy doesn't even know that he lost it, which is many times the case? So Rashi, Yiyush Shulomidas. Davar Shistamo Yish. It's something that we can assume, had he known about it, he wouldn't have any, he would not expect to get it back. Once he knew he dropped it, because he would give up hope. But somebody found it, Adayin Lo Yoda Balim. The owner, nobody notified him that he dropped it. So is the concept of Yish, does it depend on him formally giving up ownership? Or is it enough that had he known the reality of it, we would declare it ownerless? How does that work? Is it him physically saying, oh, forget it? Or is it us knowing that had somebody told him, look, you dropped your money, you left it at the rest stop, go on, that's right. Does he need to know about it? So that's kind of the discussion.
That's what we're saying, though. The average person would...
Correct. So Abaye says that's not Yish because he didn't know. Rava says it is Yish. But Davash Yesh Bo Simen, and if it has an identifying feature, Kulam Lo Pligi De Lo Havi Yish. Everybody agrees he doesn't give up hope so fast. It's got my name on it. Maybe somebody will track me down. Va'af Agav to Shemina De Miayish. And even if you hear that in the end he said, Oyve, I won't get it back, that's not Yish. Why? Because it's only after a long time that he gave up hope. But if somebody picked it up right away, the kiyas iliyada, the owner still thought he would get it back. Bisuru das iliyada. The kiyada nafli minay, because when he found out it fell from him, he didn't right away give up hope. Omar simen islebe gavai. Oh, I've got my name on it. Yaivi le simen. All I got to do is tell somebody exactly what it looks like, and I'll be able to take it. So the Gemara says, well, what if this was in the water? Bezutu shoyam, it came in a flash flood kind of thing. Bishlila shonar, or the riverbanks overflowed. There, even if it has a simen, the river doesn't care if it has a simen. It's going to get floated away. Rachman Sharia. The Torah permits it, like we're going to say later. Ki pliki, where's the debate? Medavash ein bo simen. When there's really no identifying feature. Abaye says, you can't keep it. The halo yadid enafumana. He doesn't even know he dropped it. So it's still his. Rava says, no, that is Yish. That would allow you to keep it. Did Laki Yada the Nafumina, as soon as he finds out that it fell, Miyash, he'll give up hope. Maimer Omer Simna Leslie, he knows I have no way to identify it. So even though he doesn't know, Mehashtahu de Miyash, it's considered Yish now. So that's the big debate that we're going to open up on the ground. Is there's a concept that even though it used to belong to him, and even though he lost it, but he retains ownership as long as he's looking for it and has a reasonable way of getting it back. Our question is, when do we say, does he actually have to know that he lost it and formally give up? Or is it enough that had somebody been able to explain to him where it is and how it is, then he would say, oh, forget it, I have no chance, even though he didn't say that. So how does this yish work? So Tashma.
And how in the world does the finder know any of that?
Right, right.
Is it based on time? Like, I found it on Tuesday, and now it's 3 weeks later, so I can assume such and such? Or, you know, how do you make that conclusion?
Not only that, if yish takes place after time, so if when the person first picked it up, he wasn't miyayish, even if, as we said before, he's miyayish later, if it, when it comes to your hand, the owner was still looking for it. You find a lost sheep. You know, a person loses a sheep. Animals run off all the time. So you find it. So at that moment, the owner didn't even know it was lost. But you know what? Had he known that it was lost, he would have said, forget it. But when you found it, he didn't know. So it could be you're obligated to return it to him. Or it could be you're not, because had someone told him, by the way, you know where your sheep was? You know where your animal was? Oh, had I known it was there, I had no thoughts of getting it back. So it ends up being pretty complicated to keep something. You have to be sure, well, we'll have to see what the halacha is, but you'd have to be sure the owner was miyayish before you can keep it. The truth is, we are reluctant to take something. If somebody left it, can I keep... And people put out food because they're making a tikkun, and sometimes they put it down for a second because they're going in. Can you take it or not? Tashma, come in here. Most mufusoris, peiros. You're right. Peiros mufusoris, scattered fruits. You can keep. Hello, yadim enoughful. If your fruits are scattered, you didn't know you dropped them. So that proves that you could keep it even if you didn't know. We're talking about the place where they keep the grain. The Aveda Midasi. This, he knew it was left there. This type of place, it's not that he was walking and he got a leak and they spilled out of his backpack. This is talking about where people knew that they put them there. Tashma, let's try again. Most mufusaris, scattered money, you could keep it. Amai, hello, you didn't know he dropped it. So Mora said, no, we can assume that people know if they lose money. Why? People are always feeling for their money. Here also, this money, Adam Asil Basham, he's going to check. And so he obviously noticed that his money. So after I remember learning this Gemara, so I never realized that I'm always feeling for my wallet. You know, it's like it's there in your... You know, it's something that's important to you, you're always checking. You're always checking, do I still have it? And so therefore, if you dropped it at some point, you would realize, hey, it's gone. So we're saying money, you could assume, since people normally check on it all the time, they would have figured out it's lost. Tashma, let's try again. Igule dvela kikushonaktum, the figs and the loaves of a baker, you could keep. Maybe the guy didn't know he lost them. These are pretty heavy. He for sure would have realized, wait a second, this isn't this heavy. This fell off the wagon. Tashma, come in here. Lashonisho argument, tongues of fabric, are loose. Well, you can keep them. Why? He didn't know that he fell. Morrison, Hasamnami, Agza Kashivi. Clothing or fabric was so expensive. Mishmish Mashmishbahu. He definitely would be feeling the check if it was still there, like Rav Yitzchak. So far, we haven't been able to prove anything because these are items that people immediately know if they've left them there, and so they would have given up hope. We want to know if they don't know, can you still keep them? We'll stop here at this Tashma.